Rabbi Akiva is described as promising his wife as he picked straw out of her hair that if he were able, he would buy her a tiara known as a Yerushalayim Shel Zahav, a Jerusalem of gold, a crown that bore the image of the city upon it. Welcome to Jerusalem 365, episode 221, 1967 and Jerusalem of Gold. I'm Meir Soloveitchik. There is a certain scene in the greatest children's book of all time, The Phantom Tollbooth. As some of you may know, the book describes two kingdoms, Dictionopolis, the land of words, ruled by King Azaz, the unabridged, and Digitopolis, the land of numbers, led by Azaz's brother, the mathemagician. The brothers are essentially at war, engaged in an argument over whether words or numbers are better. The feud between them is so profound that when Milo, the hero of the book, seeks, along with his friend, the watchdog named Tak, permission to rescue the princesses named Rhyme and Reason, the mathemagician refuses because his brother Azaz, the unabridged, has agreed to the plan. Quote, "With your permission," said Tak, changing the subject, "we'd like to rescue Rhyme and Reason." "Has Azaz agreed to it?" the mathemagician inquired. "Yes, sir," the dog assured him. "Then I don't," he thundered again. "For since they've been banished, we've never agreed on anything, and we never will." He emphasized his last remark with a dark and ominous look. "Never?" asked Milo, with the slightest touch of disbelief in his voice. "Never," he repeated, "and if you can prove otherwise, you have my permission to go." "Well," said Milo, who had thought about this problem very carefully ever since leaving Dictionopolis, "then, with whatever Azaz agrees, you disagree." "Correct," said the mathemagician with a tolerant smile. "And with whatever Azaz disagrees, you agree." "Also correct," yawned the mathemagician, nonchalantly cleaning his fingernails with the point of his staff. "Then each of you agrees that he will disagree with whatever each of you agrees with," said Milo triumphantly. "And if you both disagree with the same thing, then aren't you really in agreement?" "I've been tricked," cried the mathemagician helplessly. End quote. I thought of this when I read an article from 2013 published in Haaretz about one of the oldest kibbutzim in Israel, Kibbutz Kinneret, which was then celebrating its 100th anniversary. This was, we are told, a kibbutz noted for a history of contentiousness. Apparently, as it were, its residents agreed that they did not agree about many things. The article tells us, quote, "Kinneret Kibbutz celebrates centennial and a history of sacred stubbornness. Longtime residents of the small community celebrate 100 years of disagreeing about everything, except for the notion that they're the best at everything. Ziva Laish, 79, the archivist of Kfutzat Kinneret, and Aharonchik Israeli, 92, who manages the kibbutz's museum, agree on one thing, that they don't agree on anything. The archive is on the ground floor of the House on the Hill, the first house built in the kibbutz, and the museum is on the floor above. They don't agree on the awning in front of the building, on the sign on the wall, and especially not on the items chosen to relay the local history." End quote. This is funny, but then I noticed something striking and of historic import. The article about Kibbutz Kinneret also describes one of the most famous arguments in the history of the kibbutz, which was, quote, "whether to send a young woman by the name of Naomi Sapir, eventually Naomi Shemer, to study music," end quote. We are further informed that, quote, "only at the fourth community meeting did she get approval," end quote. It is a striking story, considering what Naomi Shemer's study of music ultimately meant to the Jewish people. For it would be some time after leaving this kibbutz that she would give to Israel the most famous modern song about Jerusalem that the world has known, one which draws on a medieval poet's great love for the sacred city and on the greatest love story described in the Talmud. Thus did this woman from this kibbutz, known for disagreement, give us a song that embodies the city, that reflects the ideal of Jewish unity. It was in 1967 that, as part of the celebration of the anniversary of Israel's independence, the songwriter Naomi Shemer composed a piece that was sung by Shuli Rand on live television. The song took off like wildfire across Israel, selling tens of thousands of copies, a huge number considering the population of Israel at the time. The opening stanzas describe the area around the Jerusalem hills, with the second paragraph focusing on Jerusalem itself. "Uvtardemati lanva even shvuya bachaloma, ha'ir asher badad yoshevet, uveliba choma." And in the sleep of tree and stone trapped in her dream, the city which sits alone with a wall in her heart. This striking stanza, the one that is sung right before the famous chorus, is as traditional as it is beautiful. Shemer is describing the Jewish relationship to Jerusalem at a time when the ancient part of the city was in Jordanian hands, and Jews, in stark violation of the armistice agreement with Jordan, were banned by Jordan from any contact with the ancient sacred sites in Jerusalem. Thus, the phrase, "the city that sits alone," is a reference to the opening of Jeremiah's lamentation, "Echa yoshva badad," how the city sits alone, "Ha'ira bati am," the city that was once so filled of its people. It is a reference to how not a single Jew was allowed in the most sacred parts of Jerusalem. The city, as the stanza tells us, has a wall in its heart, a wall whose gates Jews cannot enter. Jews, in other words, live in Jerusalem, but they are cut off from the heart of Jerusalem. Thus, for Jews, ancient Jerusalem is, as it were, trapped in a dream. Like Shai Agnon's speech that we discussed in our previous episode, the song describes the unbreakable bond between Jews and ancient Jerusalem as manifested in Jewish dreams of Jerusalem's past as well as the dream of return. This sets up the chorus. Yerushalayim shel zahav v'shel nechoshet v'shel or, halo l'chol shirayach ani kinor. Jerusalem of gold and copper and light, am I not a harp for all your songs? Here, as many know, two separate literary references are joined as one. There is the phrase by the great poet Judah Halevi, referenced in our discussion of Agnon, in which Judah Halevi calls himself a kinor, a harp, for all of the songs of Zion. But then there is another reference. Rabbinic literature describes how the great sage Rabbi Akiva began life as an ignorant shepherd and studied Torah only because a woman named Rachel saw something striking within him and married him on the condition that he would go study. For this, she was disowned by her father, and living in poverty without proper bedding, Rabbi Akiva and Rachel were forced to sleep on straw. In a profoundly romantic rabbinic passage, Rabbi Akiva is described as promising his wife as he picked straw out of her hair that if he were able, he would buy her a tiara known as a Yerushalayim Shel Zahav, a Jerusalem of gold, a crown that bore the image of the city upon it. Of course, all this took place after Rome's destruction of Jerusalem. The tiara was itself a way of remembering Jerusalem. Eventually, Rachel's faith in Rabbi Akiva was vindicated, with Rabbi Akiva's talents being recognized by all, including Rachel's own father. Rabbi Akiva was also known as the great embodiment of hope within Jewish tradition. Rabbi Akiva, who famously told his colleagues as they wept over the destruction of Jerusalem, that he was joyously certain in the fulfillment of Zechariah's promise that the elderly and the young would fill the streets of Jerusalem again, and to Rabbi Akiva's joyous explanation of how Jerusalem's destruction only set the stage for his faith and his certitude in restoration, the rabbis replied, "Akiva, you have consoled us, Akiva, you have consoled us." Here in Naomi Shemer's song, the phrase Jerusalem of gold establishes a literary parallel between the modern loss of ancient Jerusalem in the years between 1948 and 1967 to the story of Rabbi Akiva and Rachel, comparing the Jewish love of Jerusalem to the love between Rabbi Akiva and Rachel, proclaiming that just as Rachel's faith in Rabbi Akiva was vindicated, so too the Jewish faith in return would be vindicated. Of course, as Jews across Israel sang the song in May of 1967, they did not know that this faith would be vindicated 2 months later in one of the great expressions of Jewish fellowship and faith in Jewish history. And we must ponder the following fact. We have throughout the series noted that Jerusalem is meant to embody Jewish unity, but that this was an ideal that those living in Jerusalem had not always embraced. Suddenly, in 1967, a gifted songwriter from a kibbutz known for disagreement, would compose a great song about Jerusalem, the city of Jewish unity, the city that embodied the bond between Jews, a song that would be sung in a moment of Jewish unity. At the end of the Phantom Tolbooth, the princess's rhyme and reason, once banished, have been rescued, and Azaz the unabridged and his brother the mathematician have been reconciled. Milo bids them farewell, and the book continues as follows. "Goodbye," he shouted. "Goodbye, I'll be back." "Goodbye," shouted Azaz. "Always remember the importance of words." "And numbers," added the mathematician forcefully. "Surely you don't think numbers are as important as words," he heard Azaz shout from the distance. "Is that so?" replied the mathematician a little more faintly. "Why if?" "Oh dear," thought Milo. "I do hope they don't start it all again." And in a moment they had faded from sight as the road dipped, turned, and headed for home. End quote. In the annotated version of the Phantom Tollbooth, we are told about this passage that the author, Norton Juster, commented in the following way about the book's conclusion. Quote, "Once the victory was won, there was little to do but get Milo home. It was a great victory, but I didn't want to imply that it was a total victory for all time. This fight would have to be won again and again." End quote. Finding unity is a constant struggle, though once in a while there are signs reflecting the profound bond that Jews share. This song, Jerusalem of Gold, would be sung in such a moment, only several months after Israel embraced the song in the first place. For soon after May 1967, soldiers, and then many others, would gather in a Jerusalem of gold, with the words of a song in their heart and on their lips, so that thanks to Naomi Shemer, Judah Halevi, and Rabbi Akiva and Rachel lived again. This is Meir Soloveitchik, looking forward to learning together tomorrow. Signing off.